All right, everybody, 2 John. It took 1 week to try to set the background for both of these two little letters and to try to think of what it might have been like for Christians in that situation. And then we made ourselves aware of the beginning of this letter, and then we focused last week on the relationship between the phrase "the truth" in the truth, which is probably find 4 or 5 times in the first 4 verses, and love. And then today we focus beginning at verse 4, and we notice love paired with another word, which is repeated and emphasized. And one of the things I want to remind us about here is these two little letters are an illustration of the fact that Christianity is an exercise in realism. It is not simply a system of feeling in which each person designs his own reality. This deals with Christianity is holding before us ideals, the things we shoot for and long for and seek, and yet it does so knowing that we deal with reality in a world that is not what God wants it to be yet. Okay? Now, one of the ways in which that's true comes when we deal with the matter of fellowship. And in a perfect world, we would all be people who would all be following God's will. We would all be characterized by completely noble motives, and we would all be holding to the truth God has made known, and we would be loving each other. In a real world, there is a stress that I would like everybody to notice by contrasting two statements here in this part of the letter of 2 John. One comes from verse 4, and one comes from verse 7. Everybody notice here, "I rejoice greatly to find some of your children," look at this, "some of your children," I'll let you have that understood, "doing what?" Alright, walking in the truth. In other words, the walking means that they are living in keeping with it and conforming their lives to the truth and that kind of thing. So that part of it, everybody knows. Now, on the other hand, look at the beginning of verse 7. What does it say? Alright, here, many deceivers are gone out into the world. Now, I suggest that point of stress is the reality that we're facing here in 2 John. Now, the question is a couple things here. What does this suggest to you? Some versus many. I think that John the elder is here concerned with whether those who are walking in the truth may be outnumbered or in that way. Then secondly, there is the reality, which the idea of truth involves, versus the deceiver, which is untruth, which is unreality, which is leaving the wrong impression or producing a false circumstance in people's minds and thoughts. And then, this said, "some of your children," this said, "some are gone out." Now, I'm wondering what does the "are gone out" suggest to you, when it's contrasted with some of your children, I agree. It makes it sound like that the ones who are gone out from the church. Okay, now that's something that we'll think more about as we look down through this passage. But at least you see the issue now. How do we practice Christian fellowship in this type of situation? What happens to fellowship in this type of situation? How do we conduct ourselves toward each other? Do we embrace it? No matter what? Do we grow suspicious so that we are afraid of each other? I mean, which way do we do it? So let's start. Look at verses 4 through 6. It's all right, Lee.
And it's not finding that as a Christian you should be very careful, because the same scenario that could happen in the fall still today is still exactly the same scenario. Truth can be given. And it is just evident.
And like the deceiver originally, sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes there's a subtlety involved in this. Now, look at verses 4 through 6. And this is kind of the main message of this book is verses 4 through 11. There are like two main different parts of it. And the first part is verses 4 through 6. Let's start with this. Aaron, do you mind the read for us back there? I thought you with your glasses off. Bob Britton is going to read that for us. Okay.
I have built treasures on the sand of the sea and walking in the sea, just as we were commanded by the Father. And now I ask you, dear brothers, not to say I wrote out any of these commandments, but to learn in fact now to the beginning that we God to remember. And this is why that we want the praise of his community, this particular is just as we approach the community, so that we can walk in it.
All right, now, last week I called your attention, or we tried to notice together, John's habit of making a point by repeating a word or a phrase. And in the first few verses, it was truth. And then truth related to love, especially. In this section, what word or term does John repeat to make his point? All right, Brendan said commandment. I think that's right. How many times in these 4, 5, 6, these three verses, does he use that term? Four times in three verses, right? Commandment. Now, on the other hand, you notice he still also focuses on the word love. He mentions it. One, two, times especially, and makes reference for it if one that's another way. So we have a repeated emphasis on the commandment, a commandment of the Lord, and then on love, the commandment of the Lord, and then love for one another. Now, if there are deceivers who mislead people with regard to the Lord's commandments, what effect is John afraid, or does John realize that's going to have on their relationship to each other? All right. It's the opposite of how sometimes people think now. People think that we should lessen and attention on what the Lord commands, because that will help us love and accept each other more. What John takes is the opposite approach. The way for us to avoid suspicion and division and to love each other more is for there to be a loyalty to the Lord, what the Lord has commanded among us. In John's writing, it's really interesting that both belief and love are thought of not simply as intuition and emotion, but as obedient responses to what God has said. Now, I want to illustrate what I'm getting at from other parts of John's writing. Look at John 3 in verse 36, for example, with regard to belief. And this would be what we would think of about belief of the truth, which we're talking about here in verse 4, walking in the truth. John 3, verse 36. And I want to mention to you that the King James Version is based on a text which translates one word here different from any other of the versions that I can find. John 3, 36. Mike, do you have that text? Alright, now in that verse, what is the opposite of believing in God, of believing in Christ? Not obeying, right? So, does everybody see what I'm getting at? Belief is not, the opposite of belief is not, in John's usage, is not simply unbelief. It's also disobedience. Well, I'd like everybody to kind of bear that part in mind. Now, look at also in John's writings the way he thinks of love for one another. And I'll use a passage maybe where we all can are familiar with. We've read it this summer. Look at John 15, for example. Verses 12, 13, and 14. John 15, 12, 13, and 14. And this is typical. Three times in John 14, this comes up. John 13, verses 33, 34, along in there, pairs the commandment and the love for one another. But look at this, verse John 15, 12, 13, and 14. Now, John, would you read that for us?
This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lays down his life for his friend. You are my friend if you do what I command you.
All right, now in verses 13 and 14, verse 12 is the commandment, love one another as I have loved you. Verses 13 and 14, if you think about it, loving like this involves self-giving in the form of obeying the Lord. Doing what he has commanded. Think about it. You look at that passage. Loving involves self-giving that takes the form of obedience to the Lord. So the suggestion that love and obedience, or belief and obedience, are exclusive of each other is a false choice. In the way we handle what the Lord has asked of us. Now, so here we are. Look down through verse 4 now, back in 2 John. Walking in the truth meant what? Verse 4. Alright, it meant acting as we were commanded by the Father, right? So that's walking in truth. Now, verse 5, I ask you, dear lady, who did we suggest the dear lady is in this passage? Alright, I take the approach, this is a congregation of the Lord's people who are troubled by the problem that John is addressing here. Then he says, it's not as though I were writing a new command. Now, back in 1 John chapter 2, John dealt with this as if it were the new commandment. Here, he's simply going to say this is a commandment we've heard from the beginning, if you notice verse 2. And the new commandment that we had from the beginning is that we love one another. Now, in reading this, verse 4, walking in the truth, and verse 5, that we love one another, seems to be thought of as the same thing to me, right? And this accords with what the rest of the New Testament teaches. And I suggest to you, without taking the time to reread all these passages, Romans 13, verses 8 and following, teaches this same thing. 1 Peter, chapter 1, verses 22 and following, teaches this same thing. Obey the gospel and say, purify your souls for love for one another. And then 1 John 5, really chapters 4 and 5, also teaches the same thing. So this is a consistent, whether it's Paul or Peter or John, this is a consistent thought in the New Testament. And it's because it's what Jesus taught in John 13, verses 34 and 35. As a common example of that. So, this is not like we've had a new commandment. Let me ask you this now. Why do you suppose John would phrase it this way? Not as if I'm writing you, not as though I'm writing you a new commandment, but the one we had from the beginning. Is it possible that one approach of the deceivers that he's concerned about is that they have come along suggesting they have a new commandment of some sort? I believe we're going to read in a few verses here that that's probably exactly the approach that they say. But I think that now, I read that's two different things. For us to progress in our understanding of what Jesus has already said at one is one thing. For us to go on from that, to think that we've learned more than what Jesus said is a different matter. And the fellow I thought of, I'm amazed it only took me 2 or 3 minutes to think of this, is Vance Havner said, I read it one time, you want to be careful of those who've heard from God since you have. There's some wisdom in that. You want to be careful of those who hurt from God and do that. And the approach John has taken here is this is what we heard from the beginning, what the Lord has always said, and he should stay with us, right, Lee?
The deceiver on the church, he works the way I do every day. And one other thing is, for example, if you remember many years, we had a conversation with you in your office, and you applied God, and instead of changing somebody, pay attention to video and change yourself. Many times, as a member of the church, we look at somebody that done something that offended you or whatever. And the deceiver is really good at showing us exactly what a person did. And I think the new commandment is that you have to change first before you start to do it.
All right. We have to listen to what the Lord has told us before we're going to be in a position to help someone else listen to what the Lord says.
Oh, you think you're not touching on doing it if you do wrong?
Yes, that's
because
it. Yeah. Yes, it's how what we think he meant to be.
Because we're my dad says,
yeah. Yeah. He's really good at that. Yeah. That's a good point. Now, everybody, look back to our passage here. John will specify what he's talking about a little later. I want you to be aware of that. So now he says, this commandment is that we love one another. So keeping God's commandment explains to us what it will mean to love each other. If that makes it hard.
What I'm saying is what Paul is saying in Romans 13. If we do what God says, that will be loving. Treatment of other people. That's the idea. Now, verse 6, this is love, that we walk according to His commandments. Very important thing. In the New Testament, it's not just simply a statement to love and then for me to do whatever to you that I meant to be loving. It is for me to act as God has taught me toward you. It would be probably helpful for us to read two passages to illustrate what I'm getting at. I've mentioned Romans 13. Please look back over to Romans 13 and notice verse 8 to start with. We'll read from Romans and then from 1 Corinthians. And we could read from 1 Peter 2 if we wanted to, go that far with it. But, there's two different ways we could do this. There is a paragraph in Romans 12 beginning at verse 9 that might be helpful to start with. Barney, read it for Romans 12, 9. 9 through 15.
Let love be without hypocrisy. Avoid what is evil, tend to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. Give honor, giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence, brotherly spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation. Continue steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, giving the hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, bless that you might suffer. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those
who weep.
Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your management.
Now, what I will mention to us is that a lot of the commentators I noticed say that verse 9, where it says that let love be genuine, is the statement that is explained by all of the rest of what Barney just read. In other words, let love be genuine is not a one instruction followed by several others. It is the point explained by all the other statements. And what you notice in that is that genuine love takes certain kinds of action. Everybody mm-hmm. see that? Now look over chapter 13, starting at verse 8. We're going to read that for 8 through 10. Mm-hmm.
So nothing anyone except one or another. If you love, you may be able to
do it. All right, now. The idea that if you fulfill the law, and I'm going to reword this in different order. If you fulfill the law, you will be loving each other, all right? So explain here, verses 9 to 10.
For you shall not be an adulterer, not be a murderer, not steal, or not covet. And if there is any other thing,
alright. So in order to know how to love, I would need some understanding of God's law. And it would tell me not to commit adultery, not murder, not steal, and so forth, and to love my neighbor as myself, do no wrong to him. That would be love. Alright? So that is the kind of thing I believe that John has in mind in 2 John. Now, in verse 6 then, when someone comes along and he has a commandment that we haven't heard yet, and the effect of that commandment is to disturb the love among God's people or to destroy it, what thought should come to the congregation of the Lord's people? Maybe this is not according to the truth. Maybe this is not. So I want to call our attention to a couple of ways in which the New Testament speaks about this thought here. This, what we've heard from the beginning, the truth we've heard from the beginning, the commandment that we should walk in is that we should love each other like Jesus did. Now, what about someone comes along and he has a wisdom that doesn't lead to this? Look at James chapter 3 for a second. James chapter 3 and look at verses 13 through 15. James chapter 3. He has that thing.
Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the bitterness of his soul. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, you will not be arrogant and show a lot more than the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above,
all right. Now that's kind of a sobering passage, isn't it? If the fruit of the so-called wisdom is bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, it's not wisdom from above, right? Look back over to the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7 for a second. Matthew chapter 7. And verse 15 through 20 needs to be read. Matthew 7, 15 through 20. And when you listen to this, in view of a situation like what John is talking about in 2 John, then you have context, I think, for what the Lord is saying in this passage here. Who is to read this one for us?
Okay. Beware of false prophets and unto you in deep clothes, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves.
All right, we comment that would be a deceiver, wouldn't it? Deep clothing, but actually a wolf. All right, Martin.
You will know them by their fruit. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears a good fruit, but a bad tree bears a bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear a good fruit. Every tree that does not bear a good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruit, you will know it.
All right. There is a different way that a lot of us have never been around fruit trees. When I was a little kid, my dad did the year-round management of a big orchard in Michigan. It involved all of the removing of trees or replanting of trees and so forth. And hard times, I just mentioned to you, there's a difference between a tomato plant and a ragweed. And you can tell it how? By what kind of fruit. And as I understand it, it is a fruit, isn't it? Tomatoes are a fruit. I've heard that. I haven't been sure about that myself, but I've heard. So, how do you know the fruit? So, if someone comes along and he's really impressive oratorically, or he's really impressive personality-wise, he's sophisticated, he or her really seems to up on the latest, but if what he teaches is not what the Lord commanded and produces strife instead of love among the Lord's people, then that should be noted, and it should be that the fellowship, this is closer, I'm going to type that in, that the fellowship not be destroyed in the name of fellowship. Okay. You see what I'm getting at? Okay. That's John's concern in this letter, that the fellowship not be destroyed in the name of the fellowship. That is, by accepting and supporting that which is destructive in its influence and effect. All right. We're saved by the bell. I took a little more time with this, but I believe, though, this background is important to our handling of the two warnings that follow in this letter. I'm sorry I didn't leave more time. Make a note of what you wanted to mention when you were talking about it.
One of these warnings
we said balance is needed, and what Marty just mentioned is really important, that what we're going to see, that what John has in mind is not a difference in opinion about whether we should start our worship at 9:30 or 10, or whether the carpet should be this color or bright orange. The difference is, did the Son of God come in the flesh? In other words, what our faith is all about.
I want to ask you that. You spend that time to feel like infinite yourself. I think it's very important that the patient as an individual that you should pay attention to. And even myself, I see the mental. So I'm pretending something that I am not. So, of all things, you know, if you go to vision, you need to pay attention to the people that come and try to divide. I think the question is, my action, my action to the truth, actually helping my brothers and sisters, am I defeating myself, trying to do something that it is not even related to the law and supposed to have in my brother?
First John, if you guys need to go get the little one, go ahead. First John, in chapter 1, John was concerned about whether we were deceiving, whether a person could deceive himself. In the Old Testament, is it one of the Proverbs or is it Jeremiah? The heart is deceitful above all things, who can know it? And then the teaching that God knows the heart. That's an important thing. So God is going to command us what our hearts need in that way. So that's important. All right, we'll try to balance this next week the way John does and what Barney mentioned there. See you guys next Lord's Day, Lord willing.